This is One Up Network Radio. We're here in the fifth floor studios for another exciting edition of One Up Yours, the podcast. John's here with me. I'm Garner, your host. And as requested, we reassembled the super team. Guys, what's happening?
More of a dream team, really.
I don't know. I like super team.
I like super friends.
Super friends.
I think that that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Word.
Do we get to be the Wonder Twins?
What about the show where
Activate
the little...
your powers now, boys.
Are you going to introduce them just for those people that aren't
aware?
Introduce yourself.
I'm Luke Smith. I'm from 1UP News.
Shane Bettenhausen from Electronic Gaming Monthly.
The disappointing part is we don't have any like crazy story of Luke driving in from Columbus or something this week.
Detroit.
It's the Midwest is all the same to a lot of people.
No, it's Columbus.
See, there's a mumps epidemic in the Midwest. Glad it's not here.
Maybe I brought
mumps.
It with me.
Mumps.
Uh-huh. You know, I thought last week's Motley Crue reference was much more interesting than the mumps. We're going to go off topic.
Mumps
ripped from
vicious.
The headlines. Yeah. You don't want it, dude.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll start off like we usually do with the what you playing. So, Luke, what you been up to?
As I hinted at last week, I spent the better part of the weekend with Odama.
That's a quirky fun game.
Well,
definitely quirky.
Boy, you stole the thunder right there. I don't have anything else to say about it. It is actually, Odama is a really quirky game considering it's like pinball, like the pinball hybrid with a real-time strategy. And actually, Skip and I talk about it on this week's 1UP show. So if you haven't checked that out, make sure you check that out too. And Odama was not as bad as like last Friday when I talked about it. It didn't end up being as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's still not good, I gave it a 6. Because for whatever reason, as I'm playing through the game and getting frustrated and throwing the controller and like breaking the microphone, I kept coming back to play it again. And that to me says something about the game having some redemptive quality. Or it could just be that when you fail a level, the game insults you and is like, really? You really want to try this again?
No actual Nintendo products were harmed in the creation of this review.
You didn't actually break the personal massager / microphone?
No, I didn't, but I did offer to have a lady friend test it out.
Never mind.
go ahead. Finish thought. Go on. Come on, Rockstar.
What am I playing? I'm still playing Brain Age.
He's getting these segues down really well.
Which is great. I love Brain Age. And we also just got Okami from Capcom, the final version in Japanese. But I'm pretty excited. I think got like 3 10s in Famitsu. So yeah, I gotta start playing that thing.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Okay, so let me ask a question about Brain Age. Like in Brain Age, it shows you your age and it keeps going down, right?
Well, if you continue to improve, your
brain
age
goes back up if you're having a bad day.
Yeah, if you're having a bad day, it'll go back up.
Right, so I mean, like, there's the ultimate goal here to get down to like the brain of an 8-year-old.
20 is the base. Because after that point, your brain starts deteriorating. So you, Garnett, at this point,
I'm screwed.
You're more or less. Yeah, it's over for you. Sorry, man.
No wonder I just come in here and drool and smile.
Yeah.
If you play it for longer, what I like about Brain Age is the sort of cumulative stuff that it does. Like one day, just
tracks.
Randomly, it'll say, "What did you have for lunch today?"
And then a week later, it will ask you.
Yeah, and then you always get it wrong.
Yeah, and I got it wrong, and I was really pissed because the right answer was liquor. And I was like, how could I have forgot that I had liquor for dinner? Yeah.
Skip says he never missed, but then again, I mean, he's pretty got single diet, right?
Just liquor all the time.
I think the Brain Age is good, but I do have problems with it. Just like a lot of other things where Nintendo like innovates and then sort of like they innovate with Brain Age, but then they come off of it a little. Like the multiplayer could have been way more.
You know, the version that's coming out 1 month later has like tons of multiplayer stuff.
Yeah, but it's like, I want that now.
It's $20. Shut up.
Hey, you know what?
The
audience relate with?
You're just being picky. Competitive Brain Age? You want to do math races?
We totally thunder did them. Bitches in that shit.
It is fun. Yeah, and the Big Brain Academy has tons of multiplayer stuff. So
I'm stoked then. Then give me that one. Don't give me this Jalopy Junior version. I'll take the adult Master Quest.
You know what?
Version.
I'm just sick of hearing about any of it because I was not able to get one of those copies, and I still can't pry one loose.
Buy one next week.
Great.
It's only $20.
Hey, it's okay. Everyone else got them for free.
I know. Exactly. Exactly. And they've already been playing it. I'll be like busting mine out next week and be like, what the hell are you playing that shit for?
We'll be like, we're so over that.
Yeah, Brain Age of 65. Good job, Garnett.
Nice.
That's only like, old man. That's only like 15 years older than he really is. What are you playing, John?
That every morning when I can and still Oblivion.
Oh, God.
Dude, last night, the night before, whenever I'm on 360 Live, I look up JWHD. Oblivion.
How's your horse armor doing?
I didn't buy any horse armor. Oh. My horse died again.
Well, that's because it needs the freaking armor.
Two horses now. I'm burning through them. I exhaust them.
What are you playing?
So, man, I got the Tomb Raider on Wednesday, and you know, because we trekked over there to go get it, and I had to get it, and I'm so in love with that game. I'm so...
Really?
Yeah, it's exactly what I wanted since the first Tomb Raider. It makes me very happy to play it. The controls are smooth. The like, at least the
what
first
system
level.
What system are you playing on?
I'm playing it on 360.
Yeah.
And because I'm a achievement whore, you know what I mean?
It's marginally better. You know, I was surprised. We saw the 360 version. We got the 360 version of Hitman.
And I love how you make a compliment sound like an insult.
Well, and same. The Hitman, same publisher, Hitman. Hitman looks more than marginally better. It looks, you know.
No, he's totally
noticeably
right.
Better.
It is yeah. A little better. This is like something I was getting into like with my EGM review of Battlefield is that, you know, that's cool if you're going to bring the game out at the same time as last gen, but don't bring me out the shit like 2 months later and just pretty up at last gen's title. Like, you know, I don't want that. Bring it out at the same time or just move it on.
And Tomb Raider wasn't $60. It's only $50. That's good. Because if it was $60, that would suck.
It was $60.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, it's $60. But that's that whole that's a third party thing. You know, hell, I get the achievements out of it. You know what kind of ticks me is I see the reviews, and even Jeremy did this. I love Jeremy. I love his reviews. But he wrote that thing about, well, it's not as monumental as the original one was. Well, of course, it's fucking not the same. It's not like 1996.
Can't say that word.
Oh,
I think we can say it actually now. Skip and I talked about it.
Hell yeah!
I mean, we've like, if we're gonna sit around,
you get one an episode
per
one,
person,
one each.
Okay.
If we're gonna sit around and judge games by whether or not they're like innovative, we're screwed. I mean, it's like the same thing as in the movie business.
I mean,
let's not make any more sci-fi movies. There's been one of those.
I weigh innovation pretty heavily personally, but you know, it's not required, and I don't expect Tomb Raider 8 to be like the most innovative game of all time. You know,
I mean, did you not want to see another Indiana Jones movie after the first one? Did you not want to see?
I'm kind of done at 3 with that, though. I don't need a fourth one.
You're going to get it.
Yeah.
Okay, so even though, let's go into genres. Would you not want, I mean, there's hundreds of romantic comedies in the movie theater each year. Does that mean some of them are good?
Are we talking about genre here? Are we talking about Lara getting wheeled out for the God knows how many time? What is it, 8, 7?
I think it's 7.
Whatever.
But doesn't it not suck this time? I mean, I kind of think it sucks.
I would say that, okay, so I,
I think
already,
it sucks a lot less.
Already admitting that I love the Tomb Raider series for its exploration and the way it puts together a game that's fun to play, adventure, and all that kind of stuff. The first game was great. The second game was okay. The rest have sucked.
And this is sort of a return to form.
To me, this is what 2 should have been. Because even 2, I mean...
I can't believe you didn't like 2. I thought that was the best one.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I thought it went too much into the gunplay. And the gunplay is cool, but to me, the gunplay isn't like real gunplay. It's more like an obstacle course with guys that you shoot and dance around.
Kind of comes back to the American Gladiators thing we talked about last week.
Right.
Yeah, I think that they made the right decision just focusing on making the gameplay good instead of trying to innovate because, you know, Tomb Raider never really had good gameplay until now. So they got that right. So, good.
And for God's sakes, does anyone care how long it is, really? I mean, do we judge games by what they're worth for
dollar per hour?
People
want shorter games now, that's what they're saying. So,
this thing is like, what, 10 hours?
Yeah.
Is that pretty much the consensus? Yeah. 10 to 12, maybe 8 if you just race through it, which I don't understand why you'd race through a game. Doesn't make sense to me.
I normally completely agree with that, but I am reaching the point with Oblivion where I kind of don't want it to end.
Are you close to being done?
No, nowhere near. I was like quite impressed. I rarely play a game sort of past 20 hours, and my game clock's up in the 20s now. And I saw Patrick Joint the other day, and I'm actually further than him in the quest, and his game clock is 72 hours. So... I have a way to go, apparently.
He's probably collecting teacups or something.
Yeah, he's going finding every mushroom in the game or something. Yeah.
Wasn't it in our forum? Isn't it in our forum where the guy says he's like at 112 hours? Yeah, it's like 112 hours on the game clock and he's not finished.
I think I am at the point, like, I got a copy of Battlefield today and I want to play it. I'm kind of maybe almost at the point where I don't want to put that in because I don't want to kind of leave Oblivion behind.
If you hop on over the weekend, send me an invite. It's pretty fun. Shu and I played it, wrapping up the EGM review. We're having a good time.
Yeah.
John, you have to say goodbye at some point.
You have to let go. I do.
Go.
I might have to go cold turkey.
Yeah. All right, so let's jump into some reader mail here. We got the first one from The Bomb, 1345. Last week you guys commented.
What's up, Bomb?
He says, last week you guys commented on how, quote, poor people will keep the PS2 alive for at least 4 to 5 years.
Did I say that?
And we're laughing about it. So he says, while that was kind of a joke, I seem to be one of those poor people. I'm just getting a PS2 this week, and I have a wish list of at least 50 games.
Yeah, man.
The list hasn't been updated
since Shadow Colossus.
It's an
awesome time to get a
PS2. Yeah.
So here's this question. For us slow gamers who are just getting into the current gen systems, or for gamers in general, do you think the industry should have a mini, like, dry period, a time when gamers can catch up on great games?
No. What? Did he say he's about to buy one, or he just
did,
bought one?
Which I just wanted to point out that
it's going
to
be $50 cheaper soon.
Good job. You just wasted even more money. You could have got an extra game.
Yeah, you just save your receipt. You can go in and a price match.
Keep your receipt, dude. But,
yeah.
Like, I think this is the dry period in which people can buy a PS2 and get lots of awesome games, or even buy an Xbox and buy, like, lots of cheap games, or even a GameCube. Because
not awesome ones, cheap ones, listeners.
Well, they did just republish Fusion Frenzy for $10. Like, there's a factory making Fusion Frenzies right now. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, but now this is a whole factory. But this is the time. This is, you know, even though the next generation has started, it's just ramping up and barely has started. And this is the time when you can get lots of
PS2 is going to be strong for a few years. And we talked about this last week. Sony thinks they're going to sell 6 million PS2s this year. I'll enunciate correctly.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to really start to see the sort of, like, golden age of next gen as we know it for another year.
At least another year
and a half. So,
like, Christmas 2007.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And so you're between now and then.
Yeah, you have between now and then to get through, like, all the Ratchet and Clank games, which are awesome. Go play the Metal Gear games. Mm-hmm. Go play all your little obscure Japanese games. There's tons of stuff.
There really
are
50 really good games for him to play. So that's
shit, there's probably 150.
Probably.
No, there's a lot to play on the PS2. Yeah. Yeah. This is actually a really good time. Like, all kidding aside, like, it's a really good time.
I forgot the question.
Yeah.
Should there be a dry period?
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess. Yes. And there is.
Yes. Yeah.
Next.
Cinemax says, since the UK's Edge magazine has been mentioned on the show, are there any other magazines out there that you guys read, respect, admire, and like?
Games mags?
I think
it'd be more interesting to talk about magazines in general. I mean, if there are other game magazines that you read, Dirty Dirt. Mm-hmm. If there's other magazines gaming magazines that you read, what are they? But, like, moreover, what else are you reading and why?
I'm a magazine whore.
Really?
Yeah.
I like magazines, too.
I like magazines. Yeah. I mean, it saddens me that just across the board, everywhere, they're sort of diminishing in people's eyes. People just aren't buying as many magazines, period.
Right.
But I buy car magazines from all over the world.
Which ones do you like?
There's two in Britain. There's one called Car, which is by EMAP, and one called Top Gear, which is associated with the show, which is starting to get a lot of traction over here. Jeremy Clarkson, he's a columnist for The Times. He's been sort of the Top Gear front person forever. He's not the editor. He's the guy on the show, but he writes a column in there. But there, it's a great looking magazine. It's funny. It's something. Those two mags are two that me and Simon Cox wheel out a lot. For examples of and the show's great.
It's
a way of showing that you can be irreverent and subjective and informative at the same time. And it's like everyone has a point of reference with cars. And you can apply that to anything else that's subjective. So, like, video games. And it's a sort of really interesting way of doing that. I think Q is a great music mag. I like Arena. It's another British mag.
Gosh, so biased.
the US Esquire is actually getting better and better. They're doing a good job on the sort of men's mag side. I hate Maxim.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, Blender is actually decent because half the staff is XQ people. But it's half Maxim, half Q.
Yeah. That's about it. So Blender would be the one that I was going to throw out there.
Yeah, I like the sort of attitude that they convey the idea that, you know, we know you like music and that it's a sort of... Music's become kind of an accumulation thing, you know, and they're really leaning on the download side of it. It's always like, you know, 200 pieces of music to download this month. I really like that they're kind of keeping up with the way, because, like, Spin and Rolling Stone seem to have been, like, you know.
The hell?
But, I mean, there are tons of gaming mags. Like, I read a lot of them. I wouldn't necessarily, you know, if I didn't work at a game magazine, I'd probably buy them, but I don't actually have subscriptions to any of them. Mm-hmm. But Nintendo Power has gotten a lot better than last year, shockingly. It's been a lot better than it used to be.
You know, there's a very specific thing to the Edge thing, and I'll tell a story last time, is that years ago when I wanted to get into this business, I managed to get through to Simon Cox and exchange emails with him, and he told me, and this is back when he was still with Next Gen, hey, if you want to get into this business and you want to, like, a distinct twist to how you do in America, pick up Edge, read it, and, you know, think about it.
Yeah.
And so that's why I started taking it, and that was like 6 years ago, 5 years ago, very long time ago.
And Luke?
I hate reading.
Oh, good. Well,
yeah,
I'm glad
all day, that's what I do all day, is I read, you know, for work constantly, whether it's PR, sort of reading on the internet. So, the last thing I feel like doing when I get home is picking up a magazine to read. Hmm. Though if I were going to grab them, I'd grab stuff like The Economist, probably.
Oh, dear God, we better save a lot of time for this last question. Okay, so let's hit in the last one because it kind of ties in here. It's from Rouge 2. It says, I'd really be interested in hearing how each of you guys got into the industry and moved up to the positions you now hold, also since technology and the industry has changed and has changed so much since I assume you all got started. How do you suggest those interested in a career in game journalism get going?
Should we just do one?
That's pretty epic.
Do we have time to do four of us?
That'll be long.
Looking at Skip. That's like a special.
I have like 16 years to do.
That's a special.
You might not
episode.
Want to do me.
I think they do want to do you.
I've seen you and Luke exchange glances.
Well, Garnett, you actually just recently got into this, so maybe yours is the most easy to tell.
Recently, well,
I mean, you were in the retail side of gaming, but you just recently got into the editorial side of gaming.
All right, so if you want to know how I got here, that's we can do that. I got here by in 1997, like when I was almost 30. I decided that I had had enough of corporate world. Wanted to get
old.
Hey, you know what? So I did the corporate thing for a while.
Nearly 40.
That's right. So if you're wondering about education, I'm a degreed landscape architect. You know, if you need some architecture work done, I can get that.
I have some shrubberies that need some pruning.
Yeah, that's very Monty Python of you. And I'm not even going the other direction. John's already smiling and looking at Luke.
Anyway, continue,
flirting,
please.
I'm going to prune your shrubs later.
With a mirror. Sorry.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry.
We'd just like to apologize for Luke busting out jokes that you're not privy to.
All right, so back on task. Anyway, so I'd started writing. I was working with, I was doing community management stuff with like America Online. I was doing their games channel. I was hosting a game chat there. I was doing some reviews for them. That got my foot in the door with PC Gamer. I went up and interviewed with them. At the time, a gentleman by the name of Matt Firm was running the place. Did an interview with him that I thought went really well. Didn't hear back from him when I finally contacted him. He told me, more or less that I needed some more grounding in the world. But okay, so look, what he said was, you're too enthusiastic to write for this magazine.
True.
Which is so, I mean, I feel like I fit here really well because we're into the enthusiasm, so that's cool. He recommended to go work in the business for a while and learn it. So I went to work for EB Games. While I worked for them, I did a lot of game assessment, like, you know, getting into learning the games and then giving the buyers, working with the buyers as far as like recommending how many pieces to buy, how successful this game is going to be, learned the marketing side, learned the retailing side, decided I hated all that crap and went back to writing right away. So then I started writing through a bunch of fan sites, ultimately being like the lead editor for a site called GameStyle, which is a UK site. It's a pretty cool site. If you want to check out like an independent site out of the UK, they're good guys. Started freelancing for Ziff with GMR and then XBN and then 1UP. And
man,
it's just...
Are you going to kill that one next?
Ouch.
Oh.
I'm kidding. I mean, there's really... people talk about this stuff all the time. There's no secret to it. If you're into doing it, just write. Just write your ass off. Get in there. Get excited about what you're doing. Be sincere about it. Don't run bullshit to anybody. And be enthusiastic about what you're doing.
Yeah, it's talent, persistence, and luck.
That's...
Yep.
I would say luck first, though. Mm. At least in my experience.
You know what? Luck, dude, I don't know. Do you think luck, really?
I guess... No, you know what I would
and
say
tragically,
first?
Tragically, it's also who you know.
It, like,
it is totally who you know.
The entire media industry is
the cock block for me for, like, 5 years was not knowing people. And it was finally through working my way up in EB through the buyers enough to go and get interfaced with people in the magazines that I was able to connect.
So, kids, if you see Garnett at E3, go talk to him, hang out with him, follow him around.
Okay, so don't, because now I'm managing editor. I ain't got time for that.
Yeah, but don't talk to Luke, because he can't help
you. Luke, he'll hit you.
He cannot do anything for your career. There's no help.
If you're associated
offer.
With Luke, you're not going far.
I mean, I guess it depends on what you want to do. Like, the managing editor gig for me that I have now draws on a lot of the corporate management training that I received, you know, in other jobs. But I never really had any intention to put it to use to doing this. And, like, when we're doing creative stuff, I'm drawing on, like, design school from architecture school. So, I just go out and do what you want to do.
Good luck, kids.
Yeah, stick with it. Have
Don't
fun.
Don't email or call.
All right. And that wraps up reader mail for today. Maybe we'll come back to that another time, right?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good thing to come back to, actually.
Special episode.
All right, so we're going to come back on the other side. We'll do some new stuff. We got, like, a whole bunch of stuff to riff through here. So we'll see you in about 30 seconds.
Listening to the 1UP Yours podcast on the 1UP Radio Network.
Hey, this is Ryan from the 1UP Show. Come by and check out our latest episode. It's the season finale. the end of season two. You got to check it out. We also take a look at a few upcoming games like Loco Roco and, well, Odama, which is, I guess, out now, but you may not want to play anyway. We went over and took a look at John Gibson's I Am 8-Bit art show, which features some pretty cool, like, game-inspired artwork. And also take a look at how PC games run on the new Intel-based Macs. That's it for now, and come back in the coming weeks for some new stuff from our group.
The following broadcast has been approved for general audiences. All right, so we're back with some new stuff.
Wait, does that mean we can't swear?
I was going to say, we just rated this segment G, we're aft.
That's right. All right. The following session has not been approved for, you know, general audience. It's may or may not be work safe, and who knows what else is happening. So let's get into some new stuff. Luke, head it off.
The sort of big story, I guess, at the end of the week is that Ubisoft made the right step forward and completely dropped Star Force, which was an a copy protection software that actually totally dingleberried your computer.
It dingleberried your computer.
So Star Force isn't an intergalactic SWAT team.
No, it's not. There's no SWAT team action with it. Despite
does it have a Colin Farrell cameo?
No, it doesn't. I know. It's really not that fun. It's not that sexy of a story.
Had they shipped games with this?
Tons of games had been shipped with it. Yeah, and Ubisoft, when I talked to them for comment, didn't say why. The reason that they gave me was something to the effect of, we're our first concern as a company is our gamers. And, you know, they were outcrying against Star Force. Well, a little digging, Ubisoft was also being sued for using Star Force to the tune of something like $5 million in a class action suit. So that is the reason I think that they ultimately decided to drop it. They're looking into new copy protection software. What I read this morning was that comes from Czechoslovakia now, where Star Force, I guess, is Russian. And I was thinking, like, what's up with Eastern Europe and copy protection? Like, what are they so worried about? It's like a big thing, I guess.
Well, probably a lot of hackers are there, so they hire them to make it. Yeah.
So that's good news. The damaging malware that is Star Force is off of Ubisoft. And I think that, like, to be serious for a second, the game industry as a whole should look at moving away from Star Force just because of what it does do to
all you ever see is people pissed off at it. I mean, and the problems with it, just doing nasty stuff to your PC. And
so for whatever the reason, let's give propers to UB for that one.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, I think we'll see other people follow suit now, I think.
I hope
so. Yeah, there's
so.
No other major labels using it, are there? It's mostly independent stuff beyond that.
Mostly.
Like 1C and Buka and, you know, like...
Well, yeah, like we talked about at Ubisoft this week, like EA has their own that they use.
Yeah, they use SafeDisk.
Yeah.
And it's fairly non-intrusive. We haven't had any real problems with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so next up, Skip showed me this freaking awesome dude who set up a MIDI sequencer program to run with the Guitar Heroes controller. Did you check that out?
Yeah, I did, but having not a lot of Guitar Hero experience, it wasn't as sort of awesome to me.
Have you seen this, John?
I haven't seen it. I just heard about it. But he just said some Guitar Hero and not awesome in the same sentence. So I think we should add him.
We're going to do some remedial training this afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Skip's just ripping out of the back of the deck now.
We have some remedial Guitar Hero set up for Luke this afternoon.
Okay.
I think we're going down to Red Octane in a week or so to see what they got.
See the new.
And I think we're going to be filming it and stuff for 1UP. So.
New hotness.
Oh, excellent.
Keep your eyes open, kids.
Yeah, me and Shane and Joe are all going down there to see what their next
the
thing
IT
is.
Guy, Nick, he wants to come with us.
Surprise.
Yeah,
you have to spend the afternoon with Shane?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No.
And we killed that one dead. Yeah. Next.
And the other thing that I saw that Luke's been hopping on is this story that came out right after MLB 2K6 came out for 360, which is that there's some freezing problems with it.
Yeah, the MLB 2K6 game is having major problems at retail as far as, like, just like you said, it's freezing up. And what the hell?
Which version?
The 360 version.
The 360 version. QA, please?
Have you played...
It's not the only game on 360 that freezes.
Perfect Dark Zero?
Perfect
Dark Zero. Oblivion crashes for me once a night.
Awesome. Great. Great QA. Why are we dealing with this on this generation of consoles?
Yeah.
This is sickening. It's sickening. Like, to me, bad QA, and I'm sorry, I don't know if you knew what you were getting into.
Spitting, you should see bad, the slobber
yeah,
coming
bad
out of him
QA
right now.
Bad QA is nothing more than lazy development, and it makes me sick.
You know, Luke, haven't played too many games on Sony consoles lately that throws up.
Oh, what did you think of Zone of the Enders 2 in 4 frames per second? Great. Awesome.
I think that's a good game, actually.
God.
Relax. Breathe.
Deep breath.
Remember the exercises they taught you.
MLB 2K6 freezing.
Yeah, no,
I'm sure they're going to fix it, right?
Right. Actually, there's no telling. So apparently they had a similar sort of problem with NHL. And from going to the 2K forums, the players there say, hey, you know what? These guys never fixed the NHL game. Are they ever going to fix this game? Now, in their defense, we have played now several games with the retail and a ton of games with the burn version on debug. I haven't had a freeze.
I mean, it could be a problem with the hardware because there is a lot of faulty hardware out there. I mean, people here in the office have 360s that don't work.
Okay, so. Now wait a minute. Stop. There is not a lot of 360 faulty hardware out there.
Let's read the message boards.
Dudes, read the message boards. That's
let's
right.
Let's look at the PS2's flawless history in terms of performance.
Not so much. Look, for, but I mean, it could be a combination of software and hardware. Like some 360s.
You're going to get a large percentage of the people who have problem hardware on forums bitching, and most of the people who don't have problems aren't going to be there saying, "Hey, my 360 works great. Check it out."
It's true.
Because there's nothing to talk about. So, I mean, one of the things I read on their forums, because I was into the 2K forums deep, is it looks like it's probably something to do with, like, a swap file. And so this is one of those cases where they're not managing their file work properly, because apparently if you take the hard drive off, the game plays without freezing. And that's just, you know, that's stupid.
So it's patchable.
Probably.
It should be patchable.
From the thread I was reading, it almost sounds like some of the guys there on the forum have narrowed it down to maybe being a problem, like, if you owned their NBA game, that maybe there's a like replay file that has the same name, because it seems to always happen when you go to replay.
Let's hope 2K Games follow Ubisoft suit and follow what the community is saying.
And does the right thing. And fixes it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty fun game.
If Bethesda wanted to do that for Oblivion 2, that would be fine.
you'd be all right with that.
Speaking of Oblivion.
Microtransactions.
I want to talk about microtransactions because it's starting to worry me. That what could happen. Horse armor, whatever, but you start to hear about, you know, you hear Phil Harrison talking about where he wants PS3 to go, and you see the PGR pack with the cars and all the games being online. And what we're slowly starting to find is that there are market forces at work within game environments, which means that we're going to get to a point where if you want to compete at a certain level, you have to drop more money, which is exactly the same problem that the real-life sports that they're simulating is doing. Motor racing, the biggest fuck-up in the FIA right now is the fact that Ferrari has more money than everybody else. So a lot of the rules are dictated to keep everything fair.
Wait a minute. So talk about F-ups. Ferrari is getting screwed in F1.
Exactly.
Their car hasn't been competitive in 2 years.
Because the rules are dictating now that there has to be a level playing field. Because they're responding to exactly what is happening.
Now Renault's kicking everybody's ass.
Big teams get rich. So in gaming, people with more money potentially are going to be better off in a game than people that don't. You buy, you know, I mean, to Luke's point in the news story about the PGR thing, if the Halo pistol became available and I bought it and he didn't, should I be able to play in a ranked game with him? I need to be in special games for people that have that weapon. If I'm playing in a PGR tournament, I have the super pack and one of the cars in the super pack is really good, that's an unfair advantage, and I paid for it. I didn't earn it. I didn't use in-game money. Like, the horse armor, I should be able to use gold in the game to buy the damn thing. I buy swords and armor and stuff like that with in-game gold. Why do I have to drop $2 on something that's crap? And this is going to keep coming. Gran Turismo scares the crap out of me. Yamauchi's talked about every car in the world ever being available for download. Do you think we're not going to have to pay for that? So if I want to race in the McLaren F1, which is still one of the fastest cars ever, and I want to compete, I'm going to have to drop money for it. Which means I hope to God that when Sony says that they're just going to leave the online gameplay to everyone, that they push hard within and one of the requirements of doing an online game is you have to police this stuff. You have to limit what people can do. If you're selling them things, you have to keep the people that have bought the things together and away from the people that haven't. Because if I've bought an expensive car and it's faster than yours, I shouldn't have we play games to get away from this.
Is there any chance that's going to happen? Wait a minute. The whole Sony ideal is based around let's be independent. Let's only give a framework. Doesn't what you're just talking about sound like it fit more like with what Microsoft is doing?
Right. There has to be rules for this stuff because I shouldn't be able to compete against you and be better than you just because I have been prepared to drop more money than you.
Right, that's bullshit.
The second that online gaming goes in that direction, I'm fucking done with it. Because it's that completely eliminates. Like, when you go to an online space for the purpose of competition and someone, for whatever reason, has an advantage because of their own investment financially, It totally disintegrates.
And this is way beyond, you know,
together.
Right now the PC gamer guys are going on about how they're so against gold farming and it makes an unfair advantage. Gary Widder wrote his editorial on Next Gen Today saying that, you know, we need to out these people that have bought these level 60 characters. They don't have the skills. This is way beyond this, because this is publisher and developer sanctioned, giving people things that they're not able to use because they've dropped a couple of dollars on it. Or in the PGR pack, those 12 cars are, what is it, it's like the equivalent of $5 for those
it's
12 cars.
It's 12 cars for $5. And I tried to get comment from the guys over at Edelman. Mm-hmm. And he said that he was going to look into it and get back to me. And
now, I hope that, you know, the tournaments and stuff, there's going to be, you know, special leagues for extra stuff. But then what that does is it means there's chunks of the game that if you're not prepared to drop additional money, or if you're a kid and your mom and dad won't give you the credit card, there's chunks of the game you're never going to see.
But isn't that the same as an expansion pack?
Well, no, because you can go... I mean, like, it's like this is just buying things within the game, and like, everyone's version of the game is going to be slightly different. And then what that's... It's going to segregate games, and it's going to segregate communities because of cash.
That would be like an in-game...
That's exactly
Xbox
the way
Live
an expansion
bourgeoisie.
Pack does. Expansion pack totally segregates the game because some people have the money and go out and buy it, and some people don't.
I thought Halo handled it well.
Again, to come back to it again, like last week, Halo did handle it well. Halo and Bungie handled the entire idea of additional content via online distribution perfectly.
But I think there's a lot of publishing executives in the games industry right now rubbing their hands together with Lee going, we can make them buy a game for $60, $70 if we shove a book and a coin in with it, and then we can keep charging them $2 and $3 for as long as they're going to play this thing.
Are you kidding me? They're already booking their summer vacations to the Bahamas on
it. That's just a single-player game. And fine. The single-player thing, what, you want to enhance your experience and make it bigger. I don't have as big of a problem with. But more and more games are having online multiplayer elements. And if this stuff starts to trickle into that, it's just all going to fall apart.
You mentioned the MMO thing and then kind of went past it, but if those producers, if those publishers need any more proof, all they need to do is look at the kind of way that erodes the community when those gold farmers... Why is it that the communities don't want those people there? It's because when people walk into the game with the ultimate end level sword and you've never seen the guy before and you've never played with them, you're like, who the hell is this guy?
It just ruins games. Just, I mean, all of this
totally
stuff.
Erodes
and
it.
So it needs to be, I think... One of the challenges for Sony is they need to be thinking about guidelines for this stuff now. I agree with Phil that episodic content and extra stuff, it's all just academically, it's fantastic. And I'm so glad that we're at the point already that they're able to deliver on the stuff they were talking about. I mean, this stuff, they started talking about it 5 years ago when PS2 was coming out. They're finally able to deliver on it. But if they don't police it properly, it's just going to crumble.
So what they need to do then is what you're saying, if I'm following you, is they need to boil it down into some kind of structure of saying, okay, you know what, if you're going to do something that requires pay, here's the level of content that you need to provide. So that's
potentially, or if you, I mean, like, it comes to the fundamental question of, do we want to segregate the community and then keep fragmenting it from that point?
So if the Bazaar guys are listening, what the hell would you tell them to do right now with their cars?
I think the only way to get around this with the online stuff with the car pack is that there has to be a special league for that car pack.
If the cars, and this is what I stressed in the questions I asked, if the cars perform differently.
Right.
If the cars perform differently in a fashion that makes them better than the Enzo or whatever that you're driving.
I mean, in that respect, I mean, it's unlikely there is going to be an even better car right now, because there was some of the best cars in the world there already. But there's always going to be. But if you're playing in a sort of true version against someone with the expansion and he beats you, there's always going to be that nagging worry. Maybe they tweak the physics.
Bastard,
or maybe they
took the speed 12.
And it's just going to. I don't know. It's not good.
And there you have it, folks. John's a little upset about the whole microtransaction thing.
I think we all are.
Yeah.
Like, I think that
I'm not upset about it in principle. I'm just upset about the fact that it could get out of hand really quickly, and then I think there's going to be a lot of reining it back in.
I don't think quickly. I think it's already at the point of out of hand, and that's kind of what I was getting into last week. We were talking about the 360 themes and all that crap that they shove to you for 400 points here, 600 points there for what, icons to take someone with Photoshop 10 seconds?
That's just you and whether you want to drop that kind of money. This is you out with hundreds of other people.
Which makes it even worse.
Yeah.
Which makes it even exponentially worse, because like you're talking about, like if I can go buy the super sword and become 10 times more powerful than anybody else in this game, or if I can go buy the super car, or, you know, if in like some massively multiplayer game, I could buy some ability that made me, you know, more powerful than anybody else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the other problem is it's not like this is more content they're making later. It's like content that should have been in the game that they're purposefully holding back from you to charge you for it instantly, like a week later, and that's retarded, and I can't get behind that. So.
All right, so we're going to all count to 10.
So wait, we hate the marketplace, huh?
No.
But we love, well.
God, everyone's always so cranky.
I don't know. Jaded. What do we think of the marketplace?
I think it's a great idea, I think it's just going to, as things get more and more complicated, I think the sort of freedom of it is going to, we're going to see that sort of coming under control and more rules putting into place. And I think the publishers just need to be more mindful of that.
I want someone to pay attention to giving me a sense of value for something if I'm going to plunk money down on it as an extra. Basically, what comes down to for me.
I mean, you made the, like, if you could buy the pistol from Halo for Halo 2 for a single player experience, that would be awesome, because it's like, you know, it's like super accurate and it would change the gameplay dynamic and it would be interesting. But take it online and you're into all kinds
of
weird.
God.
Yeah.
I mean, the pistol should have been in Halo 2 anyway, but that's a discussion for another time.
All right. Well, so let us take our breath and we'll come back on the other side and we'll get into the EGM cover story and some Red Steel and some E3 preview. See you in a few. If you like what you're listening to on the One Up Yours podcast, we also do other shows on the One Up Radio Network, including the recently started CGW podcast. You might want to check that out. It's run by CGW's own Mr. Jeff Green, and he is the authoritative source in the community for PC games info. So give it a listen and check it out. You're listening to the One Up Yours podcast on the One Up Radio Network. End of the day, last segment. Let's hit it, guys. So, Shane, you did a little thing on Two Human in EGM, huh?
Yeah, the current issue, the May issue, has the Two Human cover story that I went up to Silicon Knights in Canada and played the game and talked to Dennis Dyack and wrote the story.
So how did they get wind up? How did Silicon Knights wind up working on this? I mean, they have like kind of interesting track record, right? Well, so like, why don't you do the track record real quick for them?
Well, they first started out, they made some like PC, SSI, D&D games back in the day. And then their first console project was Legacy of Kain: Blood Omen for PS1, and around that same time they came up with the idea for Two Human. They were going to make it as a PS1 game, and it was a pretty different game. We have some screenshots of the old version in there. You know, they tried to do it again on GameCube, but then they finally, you know, with Microsoft approached them, they revived the idea. They kind of changed it and blew it out into this trilogy, and yeah, it's kind of like their life's work. Dennis Dyack, it's like, you know, he talks about this is the game that is going to define the company finally, and yeah, it's really ambitious.
That's kind of interesting, because I'd say a lot of people have thought that Eternal Darkness.
I mean, Eternal Darkness, you know,
was excellent, but did anyone buy it?
It wasn't that big of a hit.
Well, Skip did.
Skip bought it.
Skip bought it.
It. Not everybody believes it's excellent. It's kind of a divisive title.
So it's kind of like God of War, Two Human, right?
Two Human is kind of like God of War in that you are like a god and he's bald and he's hacking people and, you know, but it has a lot more RPG elements and the control is really different. Mm-hmm. And I think it's different enough from God of War that it won't be considered like a clone. And they're definitely don't mind the comparison, but they want you to differentiate the game.
I was actually surprised that it wasn't more RPG like. When they said we're going to do a trilogy and it's going to be this epic thing, I wasn't expecting an action game.
It's definitely more of an action game, and the RPG elements, just more, you know, character customization and skills and weapons and armor and stuff. But there is an online mode which sounds kind of like a four player like Diablo, Phantasy Star Online kind of thing.
Okay,
you can play through the whole regular game four player co-op. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
But you know what? I'm going to reach back to Eternal Darkness for a minute, because those guys did a really good job in that game of storytelling, and they did a really good job of incorporating some light character adding depth things, you know, like the whole color coding. How did that work? Remember that?
I
remember.
You pick some different things and it affects everything in the game.
I love that game and I can't think back to that. But then there was also the attack sequence when you had to actually choose, you know, when you went to attack, you chose where you were attacking on the enemy. So, I mean, they're very good at incorporating depth and doing storytelling and keeping an action game.
And the narrative, I mean, if you listen to Dyack talk about this thing works on like three levels. There's like, you know, lots of subtext. It gets into like Nietzsche and you know, all this mythology and really, really deep stuff. And he, like, if you're into that, you can get a lot out of this plot. I think it's a really well thought out story. And they're also hinting that
I think it's great that video game developers decided that philosophy is something they want to study.
Yeah, he wants kids to be talking about philosophy. It's great.
I'm really excited that I get to go to college again.
But you know, they also hinted that there might be some of the cool things like Eternal Darkness had, those little like freak out, like, you know, brain insanity effects. There might be stuff kind of like that in
there. That was the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I'm like playing that game and I lost the insanity meter or whatever. I wasn't paying attention. And all of a sudden it's like the blue screen of death from Windows comes up. I'm like, what?
Well, it's
the
funny.
Hell?
They were talking about one of the insanity effects in Eternal Darkness was it makes it look like your memory card is erased.
Yep.
Apparently, Nintendo QA in Japan like freaked out and was like, you cannot ship this game. This is not something we can do. And it took them like weeks of convince them that that's actually cool. And it was like the hardest thing they ever had to do.
The insanity effects in that game were awesome. That was one of the best parts of that game.
So, yeah, I you know, personally, I'm looking forward to Human. The part I played was fun. It's, you know, it's a little bit of a learning curve. It's a little simpler maybe than you expect from them, but it's really beautiful and fun, and I think at E3 it's going to be pretty impressive. So.
Would you say it's going to be one of the big hits at E3?
I think it's one of Microsoft's top three games at E3.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Top three. All right, so if that's going to be one of their top three. We just saw, I guess, like coming out of Ubi, the first details on a Revolution Sleeper, Red Steel.
Yeah, Red Steel, Revmote, katanas, guns, action, blood free.
I think what everybody's really surprised about is how good the graphics look in those screenshots, because no one really expected the Revolution to
have. Are they real screenshots?
Well, they say they're real screenshots.
They insist they are.
I will say that the screenshots that we have aren't of the same environment, and the environments we have aren't as detailed, but I think it just could be that it's a different environment. So
one of the first screenshot I saw looked like the first screenshot for me, just as a user, looked a little fishy. Just like the specific, there was a screenshot where there was like an explosion, and it looked a little.
Ubisoft screens in general look a little fishy.
But the other two, good
EA screenshots also tend to look
Syndium Cry
a little fishy. Yeah. I mean, you know.
I mean, they like me enough already, so this is good. Anything else? Yeah. I'm getting along great so far.
Hey, look, you know, I want to love the Revolution as much as anybody else. The thing with Red Steel that kills me is I'm, like, reading through all this information. I'm like, holy crap, these guys have totally swallowed the fishing pole. I mean, it's not just the lure. They're, like, in...
Well, Ubisoft, I believe, from what I know, they are pledging a lot of support behind Revolution, and I think they might be trying to do what they did with Xbox and like become a really powerful force as a third party on the system.
Hey, that's cool, but the description of Red Steel is like got so much oh my god crap to it. You're like, wait a minute.
They did refer to it as magical or something. Right?
Yeah, it's like so we've got you know the whole Kill Bill sword foo. We've got gunplay. We've got emergent gameplay where you're going to be able to stop time, but instead of lopping some guy's head off, you're going to take him prisoner and get him to join your gang, and you have to think about all these things. I'm like, wait a minute. You guys get the action engine alone working, that'll be a feat. You get the action engine alone and some good narrative going, that'll be the next feat.
But yeah, if people are
talking, bring all this stuff together.
But I think it was a smart move. People are definitely talking about it. It's a good move for Ubisoft. It's a good move for Nintendo. Yeah. And Nintendo is also some other third parties are going to be announcing games before E3. So keep your eyes peeled. And they're not going to let up.
You think Nintendo's learned their lesson on third party support?
No.
Yeah,
I don't think they've learned their lesson, and I don't think that it's a lesson that they're ever going to really learn.
So how the hell can you be so excited about it like that then? One minute you're all like, oh, there's going to be all this third-party shit, Is there going to be better support?
Ultimately, 10 of the 20 that E3 third-party?
I believe so, but ultimately, Nintendo doesn't need third parties.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And Nintendo knows that.
And Nintendo knows that.
So
if they get it, it's gravy.
Doesn't need them? Wait a minute. So how do you... Let's back... Doesn't need them to reach their core audience, but they do need them if the Revolution is going to be the machine they want it to be, don't they?
Well, I mean,
why?
Because they want to reach a broader market, right?
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, well, you got the virtual console for that. I mean, like, you know, you're not going to buy a Revolution because it plays, I don't know. Are you going to buy it because it plays Splinter Cell and Mario? I mean,
no, because if I want to play Splinter Cell, I'm going to play it elsewhere.
Yeah. But what they have going for them is that developers are genuinely excited about making games like this because it is different. And because of that, they don't really have to court third parties that seriously because third parties want to make games for it. And
third-party support on DS is fairly respectable.
Well, and it's ramping up as well.
But how many like third-party games can you even name on DS? There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Isn't there a
How many
Splinter
can you
Cell
name?
Game?
Yeah, there's probably a Splinter Cell, and you know what? It probably sucks.
Yeah. But I think that Revolution is going to be the story of E3, and I think that it'd be really interesting to talk about it after we've all played it.
Yeah.
So Revolution is going to be the story of E3.
Number one story of E3. It is. I would bet money. I would bet that if you're watching, I would bet Luke so. Money that if you're watching.
I have a question that I think we need to hit next week. And actually, I would like readers to respond to this on the board. So when the PS2 came out, we knew why we were standing in line for it because we'd exhausted the PS1. When the PSP came out, we knew why we were standing in line for it because it was a portable PlayStation. Why are you going to stand in line for a PS3?
Because it's there.
Yeah, exactly. Right now, I don't know.
I'm not going to stand in line for a PS3. Someone's going to either deliver it to me or I'm not getting one.
But I would consider standing in line for a Revolution because it's something different. And the Xbox 360 was, I mean, the Xbox needed it and it was first and it was next gen. But what is the PS3 to us?
Are we going to talk about this now or next week?
Let's get people to respond and then we'll rant about it next week.
I do believe with Revolution, if you turn on Today Show or CNN the first day of E3, the first thing you will see is Katie Couric playing a Revolution game. She will not be playing Viva Pinata. She will not be playing Warhawk.
She'll be waving her arms around.
Revolution game. And that is important. And it's going to get mass, like everyone in America will be talking about it.
That's probably true because of the universal appeal of it. So, I mean, that's
the universal appeal of waving your arm?
Yes.
The universal appeal of a pick-up-and-play controller that you can handle like a remote control.
I'm just still really skeptical. Like, I want it to be good, but like I said earlier in the show, with Nintendo, like, they get so close to doing something right, and then it crumbles. Like, everyone's like, you know, Animal Crossing's so great, it's so awesome, it's amazing. And then you get to the end game in Animal Crossing, and you pay off your loan, and it's like, what the hell do I do now? I don't need to talk to these dudes anymore. And I'm just worried that after so much of this arm waving up and down, sword play, gunplay. Yeah, you like that, don't you? You like that.
But somebody get him a mirror.
God. Jeez.
I mean, it's okay to be skeptical, Luke. I'm even a little skeptical myself, but like,
really,
I am. But I'm willing to bet that this is going to be the most exciting thing at E3 because as you walk past the 360 and PS3 games, you know what they are. You know exactly how they play. I don't have to play any of those games.
So you're kind of the Katie Couric of the crowd.
I am the Katie Couric. Everybody loves her.
About you, Shane.
You're the Matt Lauer of the crowd.
Oh, well, thank you.
But no, like literally.
So you're leaving me for CBS.
Exactly. But every Revolution game, even if it's like fucking SpongeBob.
There's his.
He gets this.
He got pick it up and play it because it's something different.
I'm not going to be lured by that. I still think if it's SpongeBob, it's still going to suck.
John loves SpongeBob.
And I'm just going to go. I'm just going to go look at some of the games.
He lives in a pineapple under the sea.
I'm just
going
to go look at some of the games that we're not allowed to talk about right now. No. And that's what I'm going to go spend my time looking at.
You know, the Revolution is cool, and I'm not saying that the universal appeal of it doesn't. I could see that. I was skeptical when I see stuff like Red Steel, and they're all excited because you can twist the controller, and
I think people are excited about Red Steel just because it's the first tangible Revolution game.
And it's not a kiddie game.
That's why it's getting the hype that it is. It's not. I mean, let's be realistic. It's not for any other reason.
Well, the screenshots do look better than Perfect Dark Zero. And that is important.
Okay, so let's follow your analogy then, or your little thing you have there. If Revolution's number one, PS3 is going to be number two.
I mean, PS3 is kind of you already know what it's going to be. You know?
I want to go to something on the PS3 really quick, because there was a story at the end of the week, and I'll go extremely quickly. The PS3's, the rumor right now is that the PS3's innards don't fit inside of the shell.
That rumor is not confirmed. That's not from a reliable source.
I mean, yeah, because
you know
when I call Sony, they're
going
to go, you're right, it's not working. Luke, could you please publish that?
Love, Sony.
If it's not fitting inside, they're not going to tell you anyway. So until then, what if it's not fitting inside?
It's going to have a power bulge.
Do you literally believe that, the PS3 is not going to be ready? And they're, no, you don't
believe
there's
some duct tape.
No, because you know what? I could literally believe that it's not, because when have I had a reason to trust Sony before? I mean, I should be playing PS3 right now. If it's a year ago, we're launching in April, and why am I not playing it?
And you did get your Gran Turismo PSP at launch.
Yeah, definitely, and it's amazing. It's so much fun. I love driving games.
His response to the question at that when we saw him last week.
Do people still want it?
No, his question was, would you rather have it on PSP or PS3?
I'd rather have the damn game you promised me. Jesus, what a question.
So we just stopped doing that one because we worked on something better.
But yeah, I mean,
that's okay. But see, that's okay when you're Sony.
Oh, by the way, figured out the analog nub is shit, and you can't really control a car with it, so screw it. We're going on.
But... Yeah.
So does that only Microsoft then with the 360 cast? Go ahead.
I think they're not in an enviable position because Sony can at E3 announce several giant exclusives that are like like giant nuclear bombs that like obliterate Sony's lineup, because Sony does not have valuable IPs. I mean Microsoft, sorry. Slip. Microsoft has like one or two valuable IPs. Sony and the third parties.
But they're gonna
Sony's
going to
do the same Microsoft smoke and mirror bullshit they did last year. They're not going to have playable PS3. They're going to have a bunch of freaking movies. Garnet, they're going to steal the thunder.
Garnet, look
and
at
then
me. Garnet, look at me. PlayStation 3 is playable in Sony's booth for the general public at E3.
Wow. And that's the most clear-cut, concrete thing we've said on the show, probably. Good time to wrap it up there.
Dude, yeah. Awesome. We'll hit it again next week. How about that?
We're going to hit it hard.
We're going to hit the E3 hard next week.
And fast.
Yeah. We need your feedback.
Relentless.
On John's question. So we need to know why the hell you're going to stand in line for PS3. And Shane or Luke, three falls, who wins?
I do, easily. He's from Kentucky.
Cage match at E3.
I'm going in Ultimate Warrior makeup for the ladies. The ladies.
I hope you wear a wig.
That's not one now?
No, I want a longer bonnet than that.
I know you want it longer.
And on that note, we are out the door.
This has been One Up Yours, a production of the Ziff Davis Game Group and part of the One Up Network. One Up Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Pfister and Mike Ng, is published every Friday afternoon via the iTunes Music Store and from its home at oneup.com.